Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. Thank you so much for joining me again. And if you haven't checked out the bonus episode with director Ava DuVernay, please do circle back and do that. This week's guest is a tattooed Bill Murray and flower-obsessed woman, Sapphire Bates, owner and creative director of The Flower Arranger, who recently launched an online, in-real-life community for powerful creative women in business called The Coven. Sapphire is a master of curating beautiful Instagram pages which generate thousands of followers who like her gorgeous images and flower arrangements. In today's episode, we're talking all things business. You'll learn why it's important that you know all of the areas in your business and why you need to stay on top of it. We talk about figuring out what to charge and the crucial question you should ask your peers when you're going it alone. Enjoy. What was the second business that you launched?
The Coven.
Yes, so I know about this.
Yes, so basically an online and in real life community for women, mainly women in business, but there is also just women in careers too, anyone who's sort of passionate. And the whole idea was just fill in a void for anybody who felt lonely in what they were doing and wanted to meet friends who have like a similar background or that similar same sort of focus and drive that you have to run a business.
Yeah.
Or to even get, you know, forward in your career. They all tend to be quite driven people who spend a lot of time at work and do all of that kind of stuff. And it kind of just was a natural extension from what I've already been doing.
Yeah. I was going to ask what made you do that, but obviously you just said why you did that. But what makes this different from anything else for women?
It's a really good question.
Women in business specifically.
I've kind of been trying to study this because the feedback that I've had. So because I was so aware that there are other groups and there are other, there's a lot, like it's a buzz thing at the moment, women in business. And I was really aware of this when I started it. So I've sort of been constantly monitoring. Before anybody can join the group, they have to answer some questions. And it's things like, you know, what do you look for and what do you need to be supported in a group like this?
Yeah.
Or what's missing from other groups that don't make you feel supported enough? What's brought you here?
Yeah.
To try and adapt things. And the one thing that people keep coming back and saying is that this group does feel different to other groups. And I'm not even 100% what it is. I don't know. I don't know if it really does feel like being with a group of friends. I am at the same time trying to teach people, like a big part of that is offering skills, be it like workshops or mentoring or answer, you know, just answering the phone to chat to you to make sure that whilst we're making friends, we're also learning really key skills in business, which is something that I think especially creative people don't put as much focus on. But it's so important if you really want to, you know, follow those people in those people's footsteps.
Yeah.
You've really got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's really not a fluke thing.
No.
What did you do to upskill in terms of business? So I know for us, it was finance, legals. Mostly finance and legals were the biggest kind of things that we had to learn really quickly. I started an MBA And that's impressive. So fun. I hate it so much, but it's been really useful in kind of at least giving me a foundation to understand where at least a lot of these Fortune 500 CEOs, how they run their businesses. I know a lot of people have said that MBAs are useless. It's all about the networking. I actually don't care about the networking. I care about the skills and the knowledge that I just fully wouldn't have had. But so I know that loads of people don't have access to
pretty much what you've just said.
Yeah.
Is the coven all over? Like, it's that balance between networking with people and learning skills at the same time. Like, that is the two things I'm trying to combine with one platform.
So how did you get to have the knowledge that you could then impart it?
A lot of learning in any way that I could. I haven't done any like official courses. Yeah. So I'm not now qualified in anything. I'm still as unqualified as I was when I started.
I hear that.
But I pretty much went out and I was very much like I wanted to do it all myself, which is quite like egotistical, I think, really. Like I was like, I don't want to give it to anybody else. I was like, I can do it.
I know that feeling. And now it's very freeing to not do that.
Definitely. Like I'm at that stage in my businesses now where, I have been for a little while, where I've had to like sort of let go. It wasn't even control. It was very much if I didn't know before I gave it to somebody else, I wanted to know how to do it. And mainly because I was like, yeah, I can pay an accountant, but I don't feel that comfortable with the accountant knowing everything about my business, but it all going over my head. I really wanted to be 100% aware of everything. So I just went out. Like I went to as many sort of classes and online courses. Basically I would look on sort of Eventbrite and stuff and find anything that was like business related and I'd go to it. So I wouldn't say like I don't know everything of everything, but I've got a good basic understanding now of all aspects of my business. So like the SEO, I've got a basic knowledge of coding, building a website, the design, like Photoshop, graphic design, so that I could redo all my own branding, the accounts and the finance, I kind of understand to a certain extent. And just knowing different stuff about business, like your different options, like what's the difference between being a sole trader and having a limited company?
Yeah, something to do with tax.
Yeah, and how does the tax work and what does it mean when companies are talking about going into liquidation? All that like kind of random stuff and that kind of businessy talk that you read about or hear about, I wanted to really know it.
Yeah.
Even if that wasn't, I haven't had yet a business that goes into liquidation, but I wanted to just be aware. So it was really a sense of just going out and in any way I could. I read 1,000 books. Like I'm such a book hoarder, but I have like every business book. Like,
so do I. I have books for days. I mean,
I can't get rid of them. Like even after I read them, like, that might come in handy.
Yeah. A lot of the business books I've read about 8 books this month across November and December. And because I've read so many business books, like I see myself revisiting at least 2 or 3 of those books because they've been so essential to me learning things. I also have revisited modules of my MBA just because the accounting and finance is like one thing that they're really excellent at. And I was like, oh, now I know how to balance a balance sheet. This is great. I never knew that for the 2 years that I have been running this business. The accounts just have not existed. So yeah, but we also don't we weren't making any money like that before because it's just content. And that's our philosophy was like, it's just content. Like we're not going to worry about that stuff too much because it's content. Like who monetizes that? And now we're really taking it quite seriously. Like, and I'm like, okay. Yo, this is really, when I did the accounting over summer. And yeah, when we totaled up like just how much money we had spent on this just content, it was obscene. I was like, I didn't even know I had access to that kind of money in my life. And whoa, we are not spending like that anymore because this is not coming back in any way, shape or form. So yeah, like I definitely hear you on like getting the upskills. And it's something I really liked about Future Girl Corp. Were you at the original event as well?
Yeah, I was one of the 100. Yes.
Thank you. I never find original 100s.
I can't remember. I was number 60 something. I think I was like 62, 63.
I don't remember what my number
I can't remember. I might have got that. Probably some girl listening somewhere that's like, I was number 62. And I'm like, damn it. I was a number.
I also was an original 100. I just honestly have no idea what my number was. I know the spreadsheet's around somewhere. But what I really loved about that session is that it was very much practical. And that's kind of
what I like about events and things is that when I'm going to something, like, am I walking away with knowledge I did not have before? And can I apply that knowledge, like, practically to what I'm going to do? Because if I can't, it's actually useless to me.
Definitely.
Like, the event is useless. So,
no, it's really, yeah. No, I agree 100%.
And that's what the Coven's doing.
Yeah, basically a combination of...
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Two things which I don't want to say another platform hasn't achieved, because there's going to be people who run platforms that will be like, hun, I'm achieving that. I feel like it's a different kind of thing. I feel like we're offering something, it's just me. I feel like I'm offering something different that maybe isn't out there yet, I hope. And that's the plan. And I've very much come to terms with the fact that you have to be able to pivot a business. You can't.
Absolutely.
You can love it, but you can't be so in love with it that you're adamant that that's the way it's going to run. And that's what it stands for. And that's the way it's going to grow. Because, like, life does not work like that.
Absolutely.
And you hold yourself back. So I'm very... After already doing it with one business, I'm sort of very open to monitoring what people say, the feedback, and making sure it constantly grows and grows into something new and something that is needed.
I think Seth Godin said this, but it's perfectly okay to have something that someone else is already doing, even if it's somewhere else, because essentially everyone has different markets, audiences, networks, and it's almost... foolish, not that you're foolish, but like, it's always foolish to think that you're going to be able to serve everyone. Some people are going to come to the Coven for you, and some people will go to something like, I'm not saying FGC is a competitor, but like, for example, FGC, yes, not that. FGC works for other people and it serves a different need. And you're right, like, everything's going to have a slightly different focus and a slightly different take, and maybe some people will enjoy all three or four different things, and it just works that way. So I think you don't need to worry so much. You can take what's working somewhere else and apply that to your business.
I think they've said before, I don't know who said it though, but there was someone who said you either have to appeal to everybody or appeal to a really, really, really select market. And then the hope, if you appeal to a really select market, is that that market will tell their friends and their friends will become that market, and that market will grow eventually into a trend that everybody jumps on.
Yeah.
But you can't go like middle ground. Like, it's apparently bad to be in the middle, where you're kind of a bit like meh. You either have to be like something that everybody is like, yes, I want that, or 10 people are like, that's the product that I need that I was missing.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I think Seth Godin also said this too. I don't think it was him specifically, but I know I've heard that sentiment before, and I know.
I didn't want to quote the wrong person.
I feel like he's definitely said a lot, so can't go wrong.
Yeah. So no, it should be a really good platform. I'm really excited about it.
How are you planning to monetize this?
So it'll be membership based. It's all a bit up in the air at the moment, because I'm still building the website. I'm still trying to really work out how it's going to work, because I really want it to work best. It's not about how well it's going to work for me. It's really about how well it's going to work for those people that I'm serving with the platform. And as long as that pays me in some way, then that's fine. It'll be membership based, and there'll be a series of like workshops, panel talks, but they'll all be online, available for everybody to view. So if you're a member, you can just log in and watch the latest one, even if you're...
Oh, I love things like that. Yeah. I had a brief membership to Social Media Week, the tickets for Social Media Week are obscenely expensive. Definitely worth it. The talks are like a higher quality than any other event I've ever been at. And I was fortunate enough to work there as like a backstage interviewer. So I got access to the platform 3 months. And yeah, I rinsed all of those talks because it was a membership platform and you could only access those talks again as a member. And also like the backstage interviews that I was doing, you can only access them if you're a member. And so it was really quite useful to have access to content that people don't ordinarily get. And it still kind of puts value on the things that you're creating. And that's something I'm looking at exploring with the podcast. Sorry, listeners, but there will be content that you will not access unless you have paid for it. That's just going to happen.
You always get a bit like, I feel because I haven't yet put the membership out there, I do feel there's that slight sense of awkwardness that you always get when you have to monetize a business.
Absolutely.
Especially one that's been going and runs for a while not monetizing. Yeah. And you get to the stage where you're like, okay, this is like full time now and I really need to like pay someone some stuff. Like I need to pay my bills. So it always feels like a bit nerve wracking, but I am quite confident that there's enough that, yeah, that is what I'm doing and I'm not going to feel super awkward. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah, I feel that way. Like I just launched my marketing services. Like I've been freelancing for about 2 years. I just don't tell people things. And I never really put it out there. I'm really bad at it. And now, definitely worth it. The talks are like a higher quality than any other event I've ever been at. And I was fortunate enough to work there as like a backstage interviewer. So I got access to the platform for three months. And yeah, I rinsed all of those talks because it was a membership platform and you could only access those talks again as a member. And also like the backstage interviews that I was doing, you can only access them if you're a member. And so it was
normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Really quite useful to have access to content that people don't ordinarily get. And it still kind of puts value on the things that you're creating. And that's something I'm looking at exploring with the podcast. Sorry, listeners, but there will be content that you will not access unless you have paid for it. That's just going to happen.
You always get a bit like, I feel because I haven't yet put the membership out there, I do feel there's that slight sense of awkwardness that you always get when you have to monetize a business.
Absolutely.
Especially one that's been going and runs for a while not monetizing. Yeah. And you get to the stage where you're like, okay, this is like full time now and I really need to like pay someone some stuff. Like I need to pay my bills. So it always feels like a bit nerve wracking, but I am quite confident that there's enough that, yeah, that is what I'm doing and I'm not going to feel super awkward. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah, I feel that way. Like I just launched my marketing services. Like I've been freelancing for about 2 years. I just don't tell people things. And I never really put it out there. I'm really bad at it. And
that's the
now
worst thing.
I know.
So many people do that. And it's like, you're doing something really good.
It's just like, there like,
tell people.
I should probably like let people know that I do this so other people can hire me too. And I've just never done it. And I'm a marketer. So I don't know. It's when it comes to myself, I have like a really weird thing around money. Like I have a propensity to lower my price or like really negotiate down or go too low. Like I am just awful
at
it.
That's such a female thing as well. Playing yourself down and undercharging are things that women struggle with so much more than men. Like I think we're so emotive as well. So when we're selling to a client, we're a lot more personally invested in that client.
Yeah.
And we look at that client as a person. It's like, oh, she's a really nice girl. Oh, I really don't want to tell her that it's like £200. So I'm going to tell her that it's like 160. So then hopefully she'll book it. Just don't tell anyone because you're like, I could post it on social media, but people might think like,
I'm charging too much.
Yeah, I'm charging too much. Or I'm talking about myself too much. Or la, 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 la. And you look at a lot of men And they just don't give a fuck.
They really they're just don't. Like, they're just out here charging
that's
whatever.
That's like $2,000 if you want that. If you don't want that, I don't care. Because other people want that. You can tell because I tell everyone what I do and you can see that they're booking it. And we just like, I think it's a thing we really have to switch up as, yeah. as females, like get into our heads that, because money is so important.
It's so necessary.
We need it. You like, you can run your business and that can be your passion project. But if it doesn't pay your rent, then you can't run that business if you don't have a home.
Yeah.
It's like crucial. You need it. And I can't reiterate enough to people, like, you have to monetize stuff. You have to earn some money and you have to charge your time. Like, if you, so many people, and I sit down and mentor people, when we actually break down the amount of hours they put into what they do, and I'm like, okay, well, how much did you charge for that? We work out the hours and I'm like, you're paying yourself less than minimum wage. You could go and get a job in Tesco and they would pay you like £2-3 more per hour to sit at a till, and you've worked so hard on something that's amazing. And
this is actually the story bespoke. Of my whole entire freelance
life. It's the story of so many people, especially creatives. Creatives are like the worst for it.
Exactly, because I think when I first went freelance, I did all the research and I was like, yeah, no, I get it, but like, it's fine. I can just charge like this amount. People are comfortable with that. And then even feeling like really insecure about it. But then when I really tallied up some of the hours I was putting into these projects, I was like, oh God, I am like broker than when I started. And that's part, actually it was the biggest reason I went off freelancing, is because it was my own fault. I wasn't charging enough. So it never felt worth it. I always felt like I was working like 5-6 times harder for not a lot of reward. Yeah. And ultimately you had to really like flip it a little bit, because ultimately a lot of your time is spent one, sourcing and finding clients, and then you're kind of scoping and researching, and all of that stuff counts as time. And I think if you don't have a history or a track record of like one valuing your time, it's going to be really hard to put a price tag on it.
It's so disheartening, and it makes you feel like what you're doing, even if you're freelancing or if you own a business, like what you're doing is not working. But that's really not it. It's just that if you charge 10% more to every single client, that would bring in, that could easily, like really quickly racks up quite a large amount of money.
Yeah.
And that could be the 10% that you need to go from feeling disheartened to feel like, oh, like I'm comfortable. Like this is okay. If I just now spend a bit more time marketing myself and actually telling people what I do,
yeah,
then I could make like enough money to like properly do this and be like successful.
What was it like getting your first client? Like, how did you know what to charge? Were you scared? What did you do?
Really scared. I was terrified. I didn't really, when I left where I worked as a florist, I didn't leave on necessarily the best terms. I left quite unexpectedly because we couldn't agree a new contract. So I had to walk away.
Okay.
Because of that, I didn't have any pictures. We weren't friendly, so I couldn't use any of those pictures to start a portfolio to show new clients.
Yeah.
And I sort of built my website and worked with like a web designer and stuff while I was staying in Thailand. So I didn't have any access to anything I would have at home. Like I couldn't go to a flower wholesaler, buy flowers and create a portfolio.
Yeah.
So I was literally, I got my first like 4 or 5 clients who I still very grateful to today, through sheer enthusiasm and just being like, I promise I can do this. If you just like, let me do this, then I could do it. And then I could do it for other people if you just trust me. And
were these people you knew or were they complete strangers?
No, they were like people who had found my website and my Instagram, which has been the main place I got work on the internet. And they came and I said please enough times that they booked me.
Oh, that's so good.
It was very much, I didn't know, I was quite confident in the fact I knew I could make their stuff. Like I'd been working in a wedding florist for a few years and I was like, I can do this. I'm comfortable with this. This has been my job.
Oh, so like your CV had like, clearly so, you had listed experience.
And I could, yeah. And
it
I
wasn't
could
just like,
tell
you
them,
like,
you know, like where I'd worked and what I'd done, but I had to explain I didn't have a portfolio. So there was a lot of trust. I was like, I can create you a Pinterest board with like the flowers that I'm going to use. And try and create something visual for you. But essentially I have no portfolio apart from a really tiny little shoot that I did to put on my website so that people could see some flowers.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good though. I think ultimately you had like this one kind of gaping challenge, which is you work in a very visual industry where people need to know, like I'm guessing, well, these wedding clients, because I could imagine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like the flowers need to be right. I personally, even though I'm getting married, I personally have no interest in flowers. I'm so sorry, but I
totally
don't.
Fine. How
I imagine I need some, I think. I don't know. I'm not really bothered. Just put anything on the table. I really want some black roses. Don't know if that's the thing. Want some. Anyway.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Oh, great. Maybe I'll just hire you to do my wedding flowers. Networking. So yeah, I can imagine that that would have been like so tough, but at least you kind of established that trust and rapport. And then I like that you found workarounds for that. So, you know, looking at alternatives, using social media to really kind of not rebuild, but building up that trust and, you know, utilizing what you have done before. And I think a lot of women, but also really young and new entrepreneurs get really worried and don't look at how their experiences are transferable or don't know how to use their experiences to get new ones. And it's the biggest thing I found with doing the podcast and speaking to loads of people is that you need to have a track record in these things. And when you don't have a track record, you need to look at what you've done to kind of establish the, at least the illusion of a track record in this space. And if you really, really have no experience, what can you do to create it? Like you said, you created like a small shoot so people could see something. So there was nothing there. You still had to kind of pick up and create something for yourself just so that there's something there. And I think having that initial investment in yourself is so important. And something I've learned is that when people don't invest in themselves, then it's really hard for other people to invest in you.
Definitely. So that's a big thing.
Nuggets of truth there. Uh-huh. I feel like we talked quite a lot about, you know, money. And I feel like that's an issue for a lot of people, me in particular. So I would like to know one action that you had for overcoming any kind of aversion to charging. What can people do listening if that's something they're struggling with? They could be freelancing or they could be in their careers waiting for that promotion to come. If you don't ask, you do not get. So what was one action that you did to get really comfortable with like charging for your services?
I have previously worked for companies, completely random companies, that did not charge enough and weren't making any money. I have a fairly analytical mind. I come from a family. My dad is a manager in a really corporate company, and my mum's obviously an entrepreneur. So being in companies where I got to see things like invoices and had rough ideas of money that the business was spending and the staff were spending and what staff were getting paid and money that was coming back in, I was very much, my brain was working through it, and I would go home and be like, pretty sure they're not making any money.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? And in my mind, I was like, why would you, what's the point? Like, why would you, I just couldn't get my head around it. I was like, why would you do that? Which is why I laughed, because I feel like I went into it with slightly less of a, I don't want to say naive, but I went into it quite headstrong in the fact that I was like, I need to figure out what is the right amount of money to charge.
Yeah.
And I've got to get it right. I've got, you know, even if it's trial and error, I need to quite quickly find out what that is. So for me, it was a case of looking at other people in the industry. So what do other people in your industry charge? Or what does a freelancer with the same skills as you, what are they charging?
Yeah.
And why are they charging that is really important. So if you want to figure out how much you can charge, so when I mentor small businesses, which I do quite a lot nowadays, we tend to look at what their brand stands for, what their brand values are, their sort of ethos and what they bring to the table. You have got to have, I think, to charge right and to be confident enough to charge the right amount of money, you need to really know your business. And I don't mean just like for me, I don't mean I sell flowers for weddings. It's not about knowing I've done X amount of weddings or I really know what types of flowers. It's about knowing that what I'm offering to my client is something that they can't get elsewhere. Yeah. And the flowers that we create are different from what other people offer. And I know that we're really behind couples having flowers that really reflect who they are, and you want people to walk in and be like, oh my god, that's so Samantha and Joe.
Yeah.
And that's really like what we're really passionate about, and we offer really good customer service, and I kind of know the ins and outs, I know everything about what we are, and I think that's why I'm so confident in saying this is how much I charge, because I know that I'm worth that.
Yeah.
And I understand that it's about being, not being scared to do it. And if you really know your business, the fear, you lose the fear, because if somebody comes back and says, do you know what? That's too much money. You know, well enough, you know, that you can be like, totally understand that. But you know, my amount is this, because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And you don't feel like you're just swimming around in the dark. Like, they're going to be like, that's too much money. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe.
I tried it.
Yeah, maybe it didn't work. It is.
I'm going to go away now.
It's just, yeah, learning, I think. Confidence. Confidence in yourself. If you, the better you know your business and yeah, you've got to really believe in yourself to charge the right amount. And I think that's ultimately, you pay for people that say, it's this. You're more likely to negotiate with someone that's like, it's about £190.
Yeah.
Or my day rate is sometimes £200. And they're like, someone's going to be like, well, can you do it any cheaper if it's sometimes
that £200? Yeah. Sometimes not. Yeah. I've used the someone set my rate for me type method. So now I will never go for any less than what the last amount was, which is a terrible system. But it works really well because some people have paid me more than my day rate ever was. And so thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for valuing me higher than I valued myself. And this was something we have talked about before for on another freelancing episode, where knowing how to price yourself is a skill. So there's not really any right or wrong answers for it. There's no like one thing that you can do besides maybe find a freelancer in your industry who does exactly either the exact same thing or very similar to what you're doing.
I think,
and
yeah,
ask them what they charge.
And when you ask what they charge, I think it's worth sort of chatting through their process as well. So you might find they have slightly more to what they do than you. You might be like, oh wow, they get charged like shitloads compared to me.
Yeah.
But then if you talk through and check, you know, that there's nothing they offer that you're sort of missing. Like, for example, do they send their client a mood board, which then, although it's only a mood board, that's something that puts more trust in them and the client feels safer and thus willing to pay that extra 20, 30, 40, 50 quid more for whatever their rate is. So yeah, I always think don't just literally ask someone who you think does exactly the same thing as you, how much do you charge?
Yeah.
That clarify, double check, because there might be stuff, it might not be that you want to exactly copy what they do, but you might realize they do slightly more or they do slightly less. And then you're like, actually, if they charge £250, but I do this as well, like I have two phone calls and, or I do a venue visit as well, then you could charge an extra like £100. Like
it's
such a personal, it's such a hard thing.
I know, it's not easy at all.
Oh my gosh, I love this conversation so much, and I hope you guys have taken something really valuable away from it. You can follow Sapphire on Instagram at The Flower Arranger and The Coven Girl Gang. On Wednesday, we talk about pivoting and hopping from job to job until you find what you like to do. I'm pleased to announce that the Shoutout Network has opened up 10 new affordable membership options starting from £99 for either editing or recording. If you're looking to level up your production, visit shoutoutnetwork.co.uk to find out more. Be sure to follow Wannabe on Twitter and Instagram at Wannabe Podcast. If you're not following, I don't know what you're doing, but make sure you follow us because I do loads of lives and we'll be doing more in the next couple weeks. If you're enjoying this podcast, please, please, please do leave a review and a rating on iTunes. Even if you don't want to write something, please do just leave a little rating by hitting the number of stars that you want to give the show. To get extended show notes listing the tools and resources we have talked about on this episode and past episodes, visit wannabepodcast.com. All of the show notes are updated on Wednesday. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.